Hello and welcome to Dicebox, a tabletop role-playing podcast where we focus on playing full campaigns in less well-known systems. This week in episode 35, our heroes try to get to the bottom of a skull they didn't know they were standing on. Hello and welcome. I'm Adam, your friendly neighborhood game master, and joining me are...
Hi, I'm Drew, and I'll be playing Leorian Kitar, Disciple of Dask, Friend of Flowers, Viscount of Tempo.
Hello, I'm Robin, and I'll be playing Lissa Crate, the truth-telling, beauty-embodying, dark diva, and furious queen.
Hi, I'm Dez, and I'll be playing Ramnet, who has discovered that the death of the Overgod is not the biggest murder around these parts.
Excellent. All right. I believe that leads us into our little XP segment here. So, Des, if you want to roll for XP.
That is a pair of nines and a pair of twos. Does that mean I get shiny XP again?
I don't remember what the occasion was for the first time. So I think maybe this time we'll give you lustrous XP.
Ooh.
Anybody planning to spend any XP this time?
I think not. I think I'm going to continue to hoard my nuts like a squirrel of questionable wisdom as winter rapidly approaches.
Same. Question mark.
Ebenezer Squirrelge?
Yeah, there's something there.
Fortunately,
some part of me just died.
Yeah, I was gonna say, fortunately, I have control of the edit, so I get to decide whether that stays in or not.
Adam, don't inflict psychic damage on the listeners before we get to the episode.
Right. That's what the episode's for. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, in order to get to the episode, we should probably cover what happened last time, and I believe that Ramnet, this time you have that task.
Yes. So, Therelda's body was missing its heart, its shard, and its life. As we discussed the what, why, and how of it, apparently their death under orders by someone with an auctoritas was the biggest murder to happen here in some time. Around that point, we encountered fellow travelers in Divinity and in the Godswood, namely Beauty, Adeliova, and Truth. Adeliova appeared to each of us as we saw fit, which meant I knew them to be inherently false, given their resemblance to nothing. We traveled and discussed the natures of beauty and truth, people and roles, where the latter is a pawn of his estate, and who are both directed by an imperator unknown to me, even by name, called Ciliand. Ciliand?
Ciliand.
Ciliand. Beauty and I discussed matters as a means to achieve détente as we traveled to one of the gaps in the world that I had spelunked. And we arrived at one of them having agreed to cautiously assist each other and then consult with Ciliand once we were out of the woods as to their imperator's feelings on a universe that lacked a throne for an overgod. And then we could see whether our paths truly aligned. Once we arrived at the gap in reality, everyone meditated in their own ways, which included Leorin playing exceptionally slow music and Lissa flirting with flowers. Truth then investigated the perforation and declared it an eye socket.
And that's exactly where we pick up this time. Truth is sort of glancing between the rest of the assembled, looking sort of harried and more than a little peaked, having observed, divined, stated that this aperture was in fact an eye socket, and seemingly awaiting somebody else to do something with that information. Probably, I'm guessing, there is at least a moment of silence as everyone processes this. But that is where we pick up. Everyone is in this clearing. It is deep into the night or early into the morning. Hard to tell. Under the canopy of the Godswoods. Sun may be partly up. You wouldn't necessarily know. Everything is quiet for at least a beat.
I'm suddenly gripped with the thought that it could be an eye socket with an eye in it, so I divine for any movement in the eye socket. The speed of the movement, of course, being the thing that I'm asking about.
Utterly, utterly still.
This
is
a relief to me.
The tempo is zero.
Right. And I have a good barometer for that since I'm still playing impossibly slow music. In some way, this is a relief to me.
I, for all the world, look like someone who just realized they were standing on a grave, then tried to stop standing on said grave, only to realize that everywhere was the grave.
Based on the placement that I'm aware of, having hopped in, out, through, and around these apertures,
mm-hmm.
can I figure out the orientation, as it were, of the skull?
Interesting question. Very interesting question. Let me get a roll from you. I think this is going to be a sense plus scrutinize, which is four dice for you.
Okay. Nine high, tragically.
Okay. What I can tell you based on that is that something about it doesn't add up. It seems like it has all of the features of a skull now that you have that context that you would expect it to have, but it doesn't quite cohere. And this kind of makes sense if you think about it for a moment geographically. The Godswoods are several times longer east to west than they are wide north to south, which is not the shape a skull is. But all of these apertures are within the Godswoods. So there's something strange about it, maybe, and it you can't quite make it make sense as you feel for these apertures and try to arrange them.
There's some manner of geometric fuckery involved in this.
Adeliova, for their part, has not really stirred. They still sit and sort of hum softly, although now in maybe more of a minor key. It's not clear what they're doing. Truth just kind of looks freaked out.
I'll ask what's bothering him.
Well, it's, I don't like corpses very much, really. I know it's not really the same, but death is just so final, you know? It's tough.
It is tough.
Yeah, of course, very final. I look to both Lyssa and Romnet for confirmation that that
mostly
is in fact
final.
The case. Yeah, mostly very final.
There is, after all, your boss.
Yeah, true. Yeah. So, I mean, I look at truth as though this is, if it doesn't solve everything, it's at least good news.
Truth looks to Adelaide and then seems to think better of it and simply stares off into the distance. Silence falls on the clearing once again.
So, for my part, I think I thought the idea of a dead god was going to be a little more abstract. I don't really know what we like, what we do with this, if I may.
Well, a very friendly tree told me that we have to look within, and now I'm very concerned about what that might mean.
I mean, I've already tried that.
You've been inside the head of? Is that why we were? Okay. I suppose that makes sense in whatever distinctive way this does not make sense.
It seemed the obvious thing to do at the time.
So you were within there. I mean, dumb question. Is there like a tunnel that we could all take, or you don't mean like that?
I don't know that there's so much a reality, like a concreteness to it, so much as a metaphor. It was a lot of falling and then rebounding. And the whole of it had or was an Akatoritas.
Oh. Do dead things have those?
Or an echo of an Akatoritas.
Okay, okay.
Adelaide stands up and says, "Yes, power lingers here. Nothing lives, per se, but I believe that Ramnet had said before, it is like the warmth in a hearth after the fire has gone out. And this was a very big fire. So some warmth lingers."
Well,
and is that what you're here to seek?
Adelaide shrugs in a way that is nonchalant as well as heartbreakingly graceful for those to whom that would be an appealing trait. And says, "I suppose I can't be sure. Not exactly what we were given to expect, so whatever we can take with us, we will attempt to. There is power here, but it is uncertain how it might be best interacted with."
Can I do a divination of fury, knowing that we're standing on a skull eye socket now? Mm-hmm. And see if there was any fury within the brain that abstractly or literally lies within.
You can do the divination. What level and kind of miracle are you doing?
Probably going to do a lesser divination. And then use like the full five that I have.
Okay.
So that'd be three penetration.
Right. Okay. You can sense echoes of fury, like you would be able to hear echoes of a voice. It's
not clear at what, from what magnitude. It's very, very indistinct. Think maybe hearing, be on a mountainside and hearing somebody from somewhere else on the mountain yelling. You can't tell what they're saying. You can tell it's a voice, right? Similarly with Fury. What's interesting is that I'm going to have you roll to see if you can get information on the limits of this. So give me a sense plus empathy, which for you is 2 plus a master die.
Okay. 2 tens.
Most excellent. Usually I say beforehand, this time I didn't. There was, in fact, a difficulty on this, which in one roll engine is a minimum height that you have to achieve to get a success. With 2 tens, that's as high as it goes. You actually recognize the end of this echo. You can't necessarily sense the emotion that overtook the fury that you are sensing the echo of, but you recognize this particular sort of like taper in yourself and in others. This was fury overtaken by despair.
No. I take a deep breath and look at the others and say that whatever had happened here had erased the final throes of their fury with despair.
Despair? At what, I would wonder?
I don't know. I can only feel the emotion. I was mostly looking to see if there was, in fact, a brain of some sorts down there, but got an answer I was not prepared for.
Seems to be the way of this place.
Are we here, then, to steal the heat that remains when the hearth has gone out? And if so, should we perhaps begin to discuss how we divvy it up?
Adelieva turns to you and says, how would you take such a thing?
Well, I recently learned, I'm new on the job, but I feel like I'm learning quickly, how to commend souls, mortal souls, I should add, upon dying to my imperator. And it seems to me that with a much less mortal soul, we might have a much longer grace period for the commendation. Now, I imagine that this would be, even the echoes of this would be quite a bit for any one power, any one imperator even to take on. But if we all are in this together, and if each of our employers, each of our gods, wishes a piece of this, perhaps it's as simple as willing it so.
Adelieva nods. And for those who are looking at Truth, Truth looks decidedly unhappy. And Adelieva turns to Truth and says, how quickly do you think that you could bring Tristan here? And Truth goes, well, pretty quick. Truth closes their eyes. There's a couple of paths that Tristan could follow, but I mean, do we really have to?
Who or what is Tristan, if I might ask?
Adelieva sort of holds up a finger, sort of in your direction and says, please. And Truth's direction, and then turns to Romnet and says, Tristan is our colleague, our brother Kyle Estes. He should be here shortly. He, I think, has a rather more efficient way of taking things that it is otherwise difficult to take. And Adeliova smiles.
What would you say his domain is, then, if he is good at taking difficult things to take?
Sounds like love.
Truth seems like they try really hard not to laugh, but sort of barks a laugh anyway. And Adeliova sort of looks slightly pained and then turns to Leorin and says, sacrifice.
Potato.
I'm making exactly the same, like, nodding and shrugging sort of gesture as Leorin says that.
I'm always relieved when Ramnet and I can agree. I'm making a gesture of, see, he gets it.
I look confused.
Ramnet, comma, internally, oh, you sweet summer child.
Gold stars all around. Truth closes their eyes, takes a deep breath, and then crumples to the ground.
I try to catch them.
Well, you do. And you know, sort of help them down. And Adeliova strides over and sort of strokes their brow a little bit and murmurs something indistinct in a language you don't recognize. And Truth's face relaxes a little bit. And in the next couple of moments, you hear undisguised footsteps coming in from the other side of the clearing. Now, Adeliova is in the eye of the beholder. They look like whatever the person seeing them would find most beautiful in a person. The figure entering the clearing has something more of the beauty of a marble statue. A rather idealized one, so not in the sense of like a classical Greek sculpture of perfect masculinity, but a little bit more on the modernist side, right? Stripping things away until only the ideal. The man that steps into the clearing is tall, with shoulders that are broad compared to his waist, and a very sort of like even medium tone to his skin. Smooth, shiny hair down past his shoulders in a sort of dark gray. Silvery eyes. Dressed in what I might call pragmatically revealing clothing. Tight trousers. A short open vest. There's the suggestion of pecs and abs, but nothing so overdeveloped that it's distracting. There's a sort of aesthetic beauty. And perhaps, especially in the weak light under the canopy of the God's Woods, what stands out is that his left hand is silvery. Not a human pigment at all. He strides into the clearing, looks around, his gaze settles on Adeliova, and he says with something of a smirk, "You rang?" Adeliova rolls their eyes. "Yes, I suppose I did. We need something taken, if you can manage it." The newcomer, presumably Tristan, looks thoughtful for a moment and then casts his eyes upon the three of you. Says, "I didn't expect you to have company."
"Hi, I'm Lissa." I wave.
"Charmed. I'm very sure. He waves back.
That is perhaps an in-character silence where I want to give Ramdan an opening to introduce himself, but perhaps I realize he's not going to. And I say, Leorian, pleasure. Pleasure? Good to meet you.
Charmed. And his gaze falls on Ramnet.
The Duke of Murder at your service.
He makes a courtly bow. Says, Tristan, Baron of Sacrifice, pleased to meet you. Standing, he gives a smile that, at least to some onlookers, would probably be dazzling. Out of setting, the overall vibe that Tristan gives is of, like, that particular kind of Bishunan hypermasculinity.
That's a great description.
It really is.
Turning from these introductions to Adaliova, he says, I presume that you needed me for something specific, or you wouldn't have drawn me away from my tasks. Adaliova inclines her head and says, Of course. We've found the corpse, or a part of the corpse, of the previous Overgod. And we were wondering if you could distribute some of the leftover power efficiently and fairly among those in attendance. Tristan nods and says, Well, I'm sure I could. I know we have murder in attendance. I am very interested in talking to you.
Thought that might be the case.
I take a step between them. I take a step between them protectively, probably without even thinking about it.
And Tristan turns to you, Leorian, and says, Now I caught your name, but of what are you the nobilis? Musician, sir.
How rude of me. I actually do strum the lute just to reward his attention. And I say, the Viscount of Tempo.
Interesting. I've never known a nobilis of Tempo before.
So far as I know, I'm the first only exclusive.
Certainly. Well, a pleasure to make your acquaintance. He gives a less courtly but still courteous and very graceful bow in your direction, and then turns to face Lyssa and says, Of what are you the lady, m'lady?
I smile winsomely and say, I'm the Furious Queen and Diva of Darkness, though don't let the title mislead you. I'm quite nice as I'm well-versed on what's done in the dark.
Oh, of that I have no doubt. And he winks at you.
I return it, of course.
Dear listener, Lyssa's player just fist pumped.
Victories, great and small.
Tristan turns back to Adaliova and then glances down at Truth and says, Does he need help? And Adaliova shrugs a shoulder and says, If you've got anything you can spare, I suppose it wouldn't hurt. He's been most helpful, but as you know, his abilities are taxing at the best of times. Tristan nods, looks around a little bit, and his eyes settle on a couple of the flowers in a little patch near him. He reaches out his silver hand toward them and sort of cups it underneath the blossoms, and they sort of seem to move as though in an unfelt breeze for a moment, and then wither down to stumps. And he places two of the fingers on that hand on Truth's forehead, and there's a heartbeat of stillness, and then Truth's eyes open. and sort of look around a little bit, focus on Tristan, and then look around a little bit more, focus on where the flowers lie withered. And Truth sighs and says, "Thanks, Tristan. I appreciate it." And Truth begins to stand. Tristan says, "Oh, well, think nothing of it." And turns back to Adeliova. "So, corpse of a dead god. Always a first time for anything, I suppose. What is it that you wish of me?" And Adeliova sort of glances at the three of you and says, "Well, we had help here. So, we're looking to perhaps divvy up the remnants of power here. I'm told," and Adeliova glances at Truth, "I'm told that we're standing currently on an eye socket, presumably of the skull of the Overgod. Perhaps you can make some use of that." And Tristan sort of nods a little. Perhaps. We'll have to do a little bit of probing, so I hope you don't mind entertaining each other for a while." He winks at Lyssa again. And then sort of settles.
If you seek
mm-hmm.
a deeper awareness, shall we say, there is a hidden path, as it were. A hole that you can simply sort of step through.
Tristan nods. "I see. Thank you for the information. We'll certainly see if it is helpful. For the moment, I'm going to probe a little, but I should be back shortly."
Does he discard the flowers?
He never actually picked them up. He just sort of cupped the blossoms and they withered where they were.
Okay.
Yeah. He settles with his back leaning against the trunks of one of the trees at the edge of the clearing, and assumes a posture that is somewhere between sprawling and meditative. It's as though he is not wanting to look like he's meditating.
As performative as the rest of him.
Kind of what he's doing, yeah. And seems to tune everybody out. Adeliova sort of pats Truth on the back as Truth stands up and says, "How are you feeling?" Truth goes, "Oh, well, you know, it's hard sometimes, but, you know, I'm all right." Adeliova nods and kind of pats Truth on the back and says, "I'm glad. We'll wait on Tristan here and, well." Adeliova turns to the three of you and says, "How do you wish to pass some time?"
Well, I can make it seem to pass faster, if that's a concern. I could make it actually pass faster, but it seems like we're already wiping ourselves out a bit. I didn't mean, by the way, to ask you to. I mean, I didn't even know we were dealing with sacrifices. Are you quite all right, Truth?
Truth nods without making eye contact and goes, "Oh yeah. I'm all right. I get tired easily, but that's part of what makes Tristan so useful to have around. I mean, he's really nice." And Adeliova kind of, you know, waves a hand and says, "Well, he can help move things around, thanks to his estate." And Truth nods and goes, "Right. Yeah, no, he's good to have when you're as weak as I am."
You're not weak at all. You're actually quite amazing, and you gave us quite a scare earlier, so I'm glad you're feeling better.
Truth says, "Oh, sorry," at the same time that Adeliova looks at Truth and says, "See, isn't that what I'm always telling you?" And Truth says,
"You are bearing up under an enormous estate that is likely frequently attacked in large and small ways."
Truth sort of chuckles and goes, "Well, that's the good thing about Truth, right? Is it's sort of immutable. in a lot of ways. So yeah, I do get a lot of attacks, but
it is unassailable as long as you care about objectivity.
Oh, you'd be surprised. It's unassailable even when it's subjective. But that doesn't stop people from assaulting it. So I appreciate the insight.
I will take the withered flowers sort of surreptitiously. I'm not trying to, like, hide that I'm doing it.
Okay.
I will hold a hand out to Truth and say, if you let me, and if you're still tired, I have a way of
perking
also,
people up.
Yeah, exactly. Putting a little bit of pep in your step, miraculously.
Not knowing what she means, I look slightly scandalized as she says it.
At that, I will catch Leorian's eye and just waggle my eyebrows.
I probably blush at that point, yeah.
Truth notices none of this, of course, and goes, oh, well, I mean, it's probably fine. Making that into a question as Truth glances at Adeliova. Adeliova just nods, seeming somewhat, like, impatient. Why are you asking me kind of attitude. And Truth reaches out and takes Lissa's hand.
I, of course, do a lesser creation of furious joy.
Truth's eyes widen a little bit. And after a moment, they pull their hand back and go, oh, that's pleasant. Thank you. I wish I could return the favor in some way.
It's a favor enough that you're doing better.
You're nice. And Adeliova smiles. And sort of catches her eye and says, you are, aren't you? Rare and a nobilis, but refreshing.
I blush a little bit and say, well thank you.
As discussed previously, we are all of us varying degrees of new at this, and despite our imperator, we seem all to have decided that kindness is a virtue.
Hmm. On that, we can agree. Adeliova sort of gives a very warm smile at that. And Truth sort of gives a closed-lipped smile off to one side and sort of rubs the back of their head, seemingly a little bit abashed.
Not being sure what I'm seeing and also not being sure what Romnet was implying might be the intimate part.
As opposed to just the possibility of me fucking with you, because that's a thing I do.
That doesn't occur to me quite yet. I turn my back on the group, plunk on the ground, and just start playing my lute absentmindedly. I don't know what else to do.
Okay. For fun, why don't we have you roll a perform? Just to see what comes out. Cool, I can scroll past it. That's a command plus perform music is 6 plus an expert die. Go ahead and set that expert die.
That'll be a 6, just in case. The thing did not happen, but we did end up with 2 8s.
Okay. You find yourself accompanying this presumably early morning forest, just sort of I think about the music that plays in Ocarina of Time when the sun rises, but lute music.
Legally distinct, but yeah.
Right, of course. Yeah, no, it's not it's
yeah,
it's like, exactly. At least one note off.
Right.
So you have a little bit of time here. So Leorian is playing some music. But if there's anything anybody wants to do in the remaining time while Tristan divines whatever he is divining, then now's the time.
I make a general invitation to dance, feeling moved by Leorian's playing and also decidedly in need of something to distract me from the fact that we're standing on an eye socket and about ready to steal power from a deceased overgod.
Adeliova immediately takes you up on it.
I will also dance, and this will be my first dance role, I think, of this campaign, despite having four and a master die in it.
You know, I did keep on forgetting that that was the case. So let's go ahead and get that four plus a master die from Romnet. And let's go a very unusual thing to do, but I think justified in this case, a body plus coordination for five dice from Lissa.
No matches for me.
Two sixes becomes three sixes. And I will, in fact, surreptitiously dance myself over to the edge of the aperture and artfully fall in with the flowers, intending them as a sacrifice.
Okay. So, let's handle Lissa and Adeliova first.
I have a great in-character reason for my failure.
Adeliova approaches you, Lissa, upon making your offer, in the same sort of revolving door appearance that they've had throughout. But the moment your hands touch, Adeliova resolves their appearance. Now, she looks... Well, you haven't seen her. But anybody else observing who has will note that she looks exactly like Mavia as she dances with you.
I'm obviously taken aback by this and stumble and say, apologies, I obviously your appearance is beauty, but you have been so many people. Is there anything that determines what you look like to others, including now?
You get the impression that she winks, though you can't actually see her eyes currently. And she says, in Mavia's voice, "Well, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, isn't it?"
I suppose so. It's quite a effect that you have.
Adeliova smiles, which in this form bears quite a number of white, you're not sure if they're sharp or not, teeth, and says, "The irony is, I don't know what you see. Would you believe that before my commencement, I was quite homely?"
Not for a minute, Adeliova. I, you've up until, and I kind of glance at the other two to see if they're seeing what I'm seeing. Up until now, you've been many, many people dear to me. Some people I worked with back home when I was mortal, and many people that I've met or just shared a pleasant conversation with, people that I've shared a drink with, and people that I care deeply for in a variety of ways. I don't believe there's a such thing as objective homeliness.
I have noticed them dancing, and I've turned around, never one to miss a point when folks are dancing to the music, and it's become dance music.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at them. What do I see when I look at Adelieva?
What is the epitome of beauty to you?
The same old epitome of beauty, huh? I think in that moment, I simply see someone enraptured with the music. It produces a feedback loop.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the motions of her body become the time signature. And it, I guess I said her, so let's say female form for this moment.
Yeah.
They are unchanging in their variability.
And various in their unchangingness.
Quite.
So if Lyssa gives me a look to see if I'm seeing what she's seeing, I probably don't interpret it correctly.
That in and of itself is enough to let me know that I'm not actually dancing with Mavia, but for some reason see her.
She is beautiful in a terrible, terrible fashion.
Indeed.
Adelieva, sort of at a uptick in not exactly the tempo, but the intricacy of Leorian's playing, sort of spins you out and pulls you back in. She's shorter than you, but has definitively taken the lead in dancing here, and shadow tendrils sort of wind around you as Adelieva pulls you close and opens her mouth to say something. But it is at this point that Romnet has danced himself towards the center of the
completely
aperture.
Without an audience.
Now, Leorian, where are you seated while you play?
I plunked myself down wherever I was standing, which let's say was still somewhere in the flowers.
Okay. So the four of you, five, truth comes to plunge downward, mid-beat. At first, there's just the sensation of falling, but after only a couple of seconds, you perceive spreading out beneath you an oddly ridged plane, perhaps a landscape of uniform brown, red, and gray sinuous ridges and crevasses stretching off into the distance. There's not exactly light, but you can see it until it curves away from you.
Oh, hey, it's a brain.
Romnet, you offer the flowers as a sacrifice, and this goes seemingly entirely unnoticed.
So as before.
When I notice Romnet, and even for the first moment we're falling before perhaps I realize we're falling, I introduce a digga-da-digga-da-da, digga-da-digga-da-da rhythm into the dance music. And when I realize we're falling, I use a ghost miracle to slow our perception of how quickly we're falling, and then immediately say, I should point out we are still falling.
Can I apply, Adam, my 666 dance roll to continuing to dance while falling?
Sure.
Awesome.
Then whatever else I'm doing, I'm continuing to strum digga-da-digga-da-da, digga-da-digga-da-da.
Okay.
I love it. So, and I presume that, I kind of the background sound, and feel free to edit this out, the background artifacts kind of caused me to improperly hear you. Adelieva and I, or are we also following?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Forgetting that she's currently looking like Mavia, I try to pull her close protectively, in a way that would,
mm-hmm.
you know, ensure she's not harmed if we have a hard landing as best I can.
And her shadow tendrils return the favor, curling around you and cradling you. But you decelerate as you approach this odd landscape below you until you are suspended. It's hard to tell without points of reference how far above it. And looking out on, well, an alien landscape. Leorian continues to play. Presumably, Ramnet has continued to dance. Lyssa and Adelieva protectively cradle one another.
Can I divine for tempo to see if the landscape is breathing or if blood is flowing through it?
Nil. No, on both counts. There is near perfect stasis here.
Was this Tristan?
Adelieva says, no, I don't think it was.
I assume this is the, and I swallow, brain.
Oh. Adelieva turns her Mavia-like head to look and scan the landscape. Rama, any particular action while you're at the nadir of your descent?
This is going to be very Hogfather, but I'd like to murder the stillness.
Okay, so that sounds to me like a creation of murder. Do you want to go for a lesser or a greater? And in either case, how much penetration do you want to put on it?
Recall to me the levels for creation.
Lesser creation is level 4. A major creation is level 7.
Okay. So a major creation would be 4 points inherently.
Probably.
One, then 2, then 4.
You're on 4, so okay, there it is. A major creation would be 3 points for you.
Okay.
Inherently. Lesser creation would be free. With no penetration.
Right. We'll do 3 points of penetration, but I'm going to be doing Rite of the Last Trump to exchange some spirit for, or not spirit, realm for domain miracle points.
Okay. And is that a lesser or a major creation?
That would be a lesser.
Okay. Okay. You feel your miracle crash up against the echo of an Anoctoritas, and it doesn't penetrate, but at least some of the stillness recedes anyway. And all at once, the 5 of you are you are still where you were. You have not moved. But you are seeing in this sort of fast motion what appears to be a war alike unto the one that you are currently fighting. It is not a far leap to sort of conclude that this was how the Overgod came to be the Overgod, was through a struggle like this one. And there are a couple of things that become clear in the collage of images of strife. The previous Overgod was represented by a granite monolith that was difficult but not impossible to move, but was also not the body of that god. It was simply sort of the, we might in the present day call it an antenna that allowed the spiritual force that was the god that would eventually win this conflict to interact with the material plane. The collage of images is rapid. You struggle to take anything specific from it, but you do actually see a lot of movement of like armies and like large scale miracles, as well as direct combat between nobilis. And Leorian, you in particular are able to parse this as having lasted centuries. And then there is a moment in this collage, chronologically near the end of it, of stillness. The Overgod is alone. And after that moment passes, there is a profusion once again of imperator scale beings. And only then does the Overgod disappear. The cause is unclear. The effect, once you are finished experiencing this barrage of images and experiences, well, you would be hard-pressed to summon any particular image or experience from it. There was too much information too quickly. You're left with impressions. But the chronology does stay. And once it's over, you find yourself accelerating back upward. And almost by the time you've been able to collect your thoughts again, you're back in the clearing. Leorian, seated where you were, hand poised above the lute. Ramnet, standing where you had descended, in the pose of dance in which you had descended. And Lyssa, mid-dip, supported by Adeliova's arms and shadow tendrils, her face very close to yours, and smiling with those teeth that sometimes look sharp and sometimes don't. There is a beat of silence, and then Truth, who had come along for the ride but wasn't close to anybody at the time, goes, "Ah, oh boy, that was weird."
Truth is my favorite. Just like an absolute fucking wooby.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did we all see that?
Adeliova straightens and pulls Lyssa up with her and says, I think so.
I lean a little on Adeliova and go, yeah.
That was a bit different from some of the other times that I went spelunking.
that was you? A little bit of warning might mean nice next time, Promet.
I didn't know that it would take everyone in. I had only intended to way travel for myself. I wanted to see what a sacrifice might do. I only have one flower left in my hand.
Tristan stands up at the edge of the clearing and says, did someone call?
Indirectly.
Adeliova lets go of Ulyssa and reverts to the sort of shifting appearance in your eyes of various people that you have encountered.
I breathe a sigh of relief.
Tristan walks into the clearing. And says, goodness, it seems as though you want an adventure without me. Learn anything useful?
Chronology.
Oh, do tell.
Previously there were many gods, and then there was the Overgod. Then there were some imperators, and briefly still the Overgod, and then no longer the Overgod.
Well, that could be useful information. In the meantime, well, it seems that this place is, well, it's hard to put into words. The idea of the body of the Overgod, it's unclear to me whether it ever took a physical form, but if it did, this is where its head would have ended up. So I think
the metaphorical nature of its corpse is part of the nature of that god. There was a rock that was its point of connection.
I raise my fingers in the gesture of two antennas to in my head.
And other metaphors that are lost on a world without radio.
I mean, there's bugs.
Sure.
There's bugs, all right.
Bugs.
And thus, the god itself may not have, as you say, taken on a physical form so much as the idea of it.
Well, either way, I think that I can use this aperture to take, and you can hear the capital T in the word take, what remains here. Tristan looks to Adeliova and says, so, how are we going to divvy this up? I wasn't here for the whole thing, but it'll be up to me to divide it, so how do you want me to do it? And Adeliova goes, well, there are three of them and three of us, so I think evenly will do the trick, don't you think? Truth, though not seemingly having been consulted here, goes, I mean, yeah, that sounds like a good idea, right? Evenly, it's fair, it's right, it's good. And Tristan nods and says, very well, and walks to the middle of the clearing.
Can I ask something of it before you do your thing?
Certainly. Anything, little lady?
Thank you, Tristan. I don't remember if my first question along these lines was lesser or greater divination. But after witnessing the chronology and after placing the despair within it, perhaps correctly or incorrectly, but at least theorizing where that would go, I want to divine silently how to prevent fury from becoming part of a whole again.
Interesting. Okay, so is this a lesser or a greater divination, do you think?
It's going to be specifically directed to the head region.
Sure.
So I'm not sure, because it's a big question with a small focus on the domain.
Well, and the language of the miracles is lesser divinations learn about a state. Major divinations scry ask a state about something. So you are...
So major.
Okay. That's level 5 for you, which I believe is free still.
Mm-hmm.
Are you applying any penetration to it?
I'm not.
Okay.
I don't think I did the last time, so...
All right. And just one more time to make sure that I am not misremembering it, your exact wording of your question.
How can we prevent fury from becoming part of a whole again?
Okay.
Or how can we prevent... Yeah, I'll stick with that wording.
How can we prevent fury from being part of a whole again? The answer that you get from your estate is in two very clear steps. No winner. Don't let Tristan touch you.
Oh boy. I take a step back and shoot a very meaningful look at Ramna.
Tristan walks to the middle of this
What is
clearing.
The means by which this power will be distributed, even though we have discussed its equitableness?
Tristan answers. I'm going to pull it from the corpse of the Overgod, and then I'll distribute it to each person individually.
How will you distribute it?
Well, he holds up his silver left hand and says, the same way I did with Truth earlier, gesturing at Truth. Just a quick tap and... I'll send the power into you.
So this is, it's professional interest. It's also personal interest. I don't mean to ask a rude question, but you're so sacrifice, right? If I may, what is it you are in this case sacrificing? It's just that the divvying up of the power was sort of on the basis that, no one, nothing was using it anymore, but then it seems there would be no sacrifice.
Oh, well, it's a little embarrassing. I'm only a baron of sacrifice, and if you've used the sight on me, you'll know that my auctoritas is not particularly strong. I have no control over I have no control over Celion's chancel, nor do I have any physical or mental abilities beyond what my body gives me. Most of my divinity is bound up, and he wiggles his fingers, in my hand. It is a gift, you see. I may take, and I may give. My plan is to take the power from what's left of the previous Overgod here, and then to give it to all of you. And myself, of course.
I look at Ramnet again after a moment of being very uncomfortable.
Forwardness and my lack of immediately given trust on this. Utliova and I had some discussions about winners and losers and eternity and so on our way here, and you were not present for much of that, but what is to stop you from taking from us?
Well, I suppose my own scruples and the disapproval of your companions.
I will look to truth after Tristan says his piece.
Truth looks a little stricken, but closes their eyes and goes, that's how it would be done.
Truth?
Yeah?
Why is my estate telling me not to allow Tristan to touch me? And no offense meant to you, I'm reiterating my divination here.
Oh, I don't know. And Truth sort of squats down and like clutches their head to either side and goes, I don't know.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
How is Tristan reacting to that statement? Of Lissa's, not of Truth's.
Not. No change in comportment whatsoever.
I will also flip on the sight, as it were, and where does everybody's spirit stand in relative speaking?
I probably do this in tandem without realizing I'm doing it in tandem.
Sure. So, Truth's spirit, brightness, if you will, appears to be about on par with Romnet's.
Okay.
Adeliova's spirit seems to be about on par with Lissa's. Tristan's spirit is dimmer than both.
No.
How much spirit do you have, Lissa?
I'm scrolling. I should know this by memory, but numbers, I trust myself numbers. Not, so two.
I understand.
You have two?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I would not think to do this, but for the record, I have four. I can throw myself on a bullet if need.
So, we know that from that Tristan has approximately one or two.
Yeah, one at most.
Because he's dimmer.
Do you need to equal an Octorotas to penetrate it or beat it?
Equal it.
Okay. So I would like to do a major divination of murder.
Okay. A major divination of murder. So that's going to be one miracle point to the major divination. Would you like
and
to
one penetration. Penetration?
One penetration. Yes. Okay. And your question to your estate.
What is the name of the nobilis that Tristan has most recently caused the death of? That is to say, murdered.
Theralda.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. Did you use your hand to take Theralda's shard?
Tristan stops. Tristan had already gotten to the middle of the clearing. It was sort of starting leaning down and stops and turns and says, "Beg your pardon.
I'm so sorry. I can't." And I give myself to Mavia.
Out of
curiosity, this may not be a courtesy I owe you, but you may want to stand back.
Out of curiosity, Robin, is there any particular manner in which Lyssa gives herself to Mavia, or thought or statement with which she gives herself to Mavia?
There is. I remember how it felt to embrace and be embraced by her and dance and retreat to her as a place of comfort.
So, Leorian, Ramnet, you have a split second of foreknowledge here as you start to see what is happening to Lyssa. It is a heartbeat reaction, but if you've got one, now's the time.
I am going to do a lesser creation of murder with one penetration and Mavia as the agent.
Yes!
Okay. And Leorian, anything in particular?
I have spent so many miracle points this fucking session.
I perform a ghost miracle on Tristan so that whatever reaction he was about to make, he makes it a bit slower than he thought he did.
Okay. And I'm going to make that a sort of contemporaneous, maybe not the right word, simultaneous, probably better, with your statement about, you may want to back up.
Yes.
And all at once, Lyssa is consumed in writhing shadow, and moments later, Mavia comes rocketing out of the sort of miasma that dissipates quickly behind her toward Tristan. Tristan turns, looking alarmed. Now, Mavia, I would like it if you could give me a body plus fight. 5 dice.
Oh, darn. Hoping not to get close to him.
I mean, how much are your shadow tendrils, you? Also, how much are you fury at the moment rather than darkness?
Two fives and two ones.
Two fives and two ones. All right, give me just a moment. Because now Tristan also has to make a roll. As you approach Tristan, you sort of hurl your tendrils forward, and his left hand comes up and grabs one, and he glares past it at you as his silver hand crushes the tendril, and it wisps away into sort of smoky shadows that whirl around his hand and then are gone. Only this distracts him from the tendril at his feet. It pulls one foot out from under him and sends him careening to the ground.
Who are you to think that you can take from me when they have already taken everything? You take, you give, and yet you never take from yourself.
I do a lesser creation of fury to get him to touch his face with his hand. Oh. And sacrifice.
Interesting. Are you putting any penetration on that creation?
You know how much you need.
Yeah, so lesser creation would have been a level 4.
Okay.
So I have to either match or go over. So I just need that extra 1 point.
It remains free. Now, of course, the thing about this is that fury is unpredictable. So we have a habit of making you roll to get the result you want. In this case, a command plus inspire. Know that there is a difficulty.
Okay.
That is 1 plus a master die for our folks at home.
2 tens.
Marvelous.
Oh, that'll do.
So I have here Tristan's roll to try and resist this.
At what point does my miracle go off?
It's already gone off.
Beautiful.
There is a moment, Mavia, where you think perhaps it won't work. Tristan looks at his silver hand, fingers tensed and partially curled, and he, glaring at them, sort of screams, "Rah!" at his hand, and then it lurches toward his face. You aren't clear on exactly what happens next. Leorian, Romnet, actions.
I'm looking at the other two.
Truth still cowers on the ground, seemingly entirely within themselves. Arlyova seems to be watching with interest the proceedings, but has not made a move yet.
Somehow I know that this is going the way it needs to. So perhaps for the first time in a tense situation, I resist the urge to throw every imaginable miracle point at the situation, but I do perform another ghost miracle so that whatever it is that's happening happens just that much faster.
Mm-hmm. Tristan howls.
I will commend Tristan's death to Dusk.
Interesting. Very interesting.
It is, after all, now a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
Do you say that out loud? Or is this a wordless commendation?
I think the specifics of it are, dearest Dusk, a sacrifice of sacrifice.
So, Romnet, you have 1 miracle point remaining in domain, 1 miracle point remaining in realm, 1 miracle point remaining in spirit, and 4 miracle points remaining in aspect.
Yup.
I need you to lose 5 miracle points in whatever configuration you decide.
Well, then. Cool.
Mavia. Cool.
There's a sacrifice to sacrifice sacrifice.
It gets meta very quickly. We knew to expect this because me.
Mavia. Tristan is fighting you. What are you willing to spend to enforce your will on this act of self-sacrifice?
Is whatever it takes too ambiguous an answer? Are you looking for a specific number?
It is not too ambiguous an answer. I would like you to lose 5 miracle points, however you wish to divide them.
Okay. I'm just going to yeet my realm miracle points out of here.
Yeah, I'm down to 1 aspect and 1 domain miracle point.
Yeah, this, one of my domain.
I have gone through 15 miracle points this session.
I think that's a record.
I think so.
It might be.
Yeah, when you don't spend miracle points, but when you do, you go big.
I was gonna say, even when Lyssa and Mavia got nettled, I think you were already low enough on miracle points that you didn't quite hit 15 in that session. So, two observers, Leorian, Truth, to some degree, Ramnet. Tristan's silver hand grasps his own face as Mavia's shadow tentacles whip around at the edge of his Octorotas. And there is a moment. It would be wrong to call it stillness, but there's a moment where there's a tableau that includes the clenching of the hand and the whipping of the shadow tendrils.
After all, I've already murdered stillness.
And when it cracks, when this tableau shatters, Tristan shrieks as slowly his whole body turns to silver in an attitude of kneeling pain, clutching his own face. Adeliova, standing nearby, smiles. Takes 2 steps to where Truth is, and both are gone. There is a sudden stillness. In this moment, Mavia, you feel exultant in your triumph, standing over the silver statue of the nobilis of sacrifice. And I would like to get a roll from you. I would like you to roll sense plus empathy. 2 dice plus a master die.
It's going to be 2 4s.
There is a moment where you can feel the shard of sacrifice in Tristan. And you can also feel another shard. And after a heartbeat, you realize it's familiar. In fact, it's downright homey. This shard is the Forge.
I want it.
Don't have enough strength on your own to take either one. But you know that you could call for help. Mott might lend you strength to broaden their portfolio. And you know that Mott approves of you.
I cackle into the woods and in exultation shriek.
Help me, my dark progenitor.
strength floods into your shadow tendrils from your Imperator, and you yank, wrench, first the forge and then sacrifice free of Tristan. And that is the last thing you are aware of for some time. Leorian, Romnet. Everything happens very quickly. Tristan turns to silver. Adelyova and Truth disappear. And Mavia shrieks exultantly and then tears Tristan's heart, silver and still beating, out of his body and devours it in 3 bites. Immediate responses.
Oh, hey, does Worldwalker tell me where they went?
Interesting.
Maybe you're just doing Mavia things, like, whatever.
Not exactly. You know that they left by the power of an Imperator and went back to that Imperator's chancel, and given context clues, you are pretty sure that Imperator is Celiant.
Are you sure?
But you're not sure where the chancel is, or if you could follow from here. Leorian?
Can I try?
Just a moment.
Sure.
Leorian?
I call out to the Furious Queen, but it's probably not words that come out exactly. It's it's a jumble of thoughts. It's something like, is this what you meant to? And then I'm taken aback by what I'm seeing. But mainly, I listen to see if there's still a tempo to the heart. Is it still beating as she devours it? And is she still in any danger from this interloper?
It is beating as she devours it, and then it synchronizes with her own heartbeat. Romnet. Trying to follow seems at first like it's going to work. You can sense the direction and the path, for lack of a better word, that they took. But you have the odd sensation of being spiritually clotheslined. You are moving, and then something strikes you, and you are stopped. You think, shaking it off, that you drew the personal attention of an Imperator.
One of any of 3 possibilities there.
Mavia. This is weird. You ate a heart. It was awesome. But also, now you aren't as big a part of the whole as you once were. You're flush with power and approval from Mott. But you are also only a quarter of the being that you now inhabit. You're not entirely sure that you could put into words what happens next. But to outside observers, specifically Leorin and Romnet. What you see as Mavia swallows the last of the heart is an exultant sort of like upward pose of arms and head and shadow tendrils. And then it is as though the storm stills or calms. It doesn't go quiet entirely. Lyssa has not come back to the fore. And yet, the shadows fall away somewhat. They are no longer an aspect, but just garments, mostly still, simply hanging off of the form that they adorn. A familiar form, in fact, albeit different. It looks like Lyssa. A little shorter, a little less muscular, lacking most of the tattoos, and with simply a medium-length mane of barely kempt hair, but wearing full-size Lyssa's normal blacksmithing clothes and seemingly engulfed by them. After a beat of stillness, this younger Lyssa falls to her knees and with a toothy grimace and without a sound begins to weep. Two tears rolling down the left side, one down the right side of her face, which itself is fixed in a hostile grimace before the silver statue of the heartless nobilis of sacrifice. And that's where we'll end our session.
Out of curiosity, Adam,
mm-hmm.
Did my sacrifice and my 5 miracle points do anything there?
You have no idea. Part of what's entailed by sacrificing something to an imperator other than your own. So, everybody can have one mortal and one divine experience point. And ooh. Robin, you will get 2 divine miracle points.
Yay!
And you will add sacrifice and the forge at 0 as domains.
Jesus, you're just you're collecting a literal portfolio here.
Oh boy.
Gotta catch them all. Gotta embody them all.
We're approaching the end of the campaign here.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. I find myself once again envying you. Your profusion.
Have I mentioned that I'm pretty sure we're hiring?
That's what I was trying to help do.
So.
I don't even know how to structure this on my sheet, so I can save it for later.
Well, that concludes our session of Dice Punks. Thanks for joining us. I hope our players and our listeners enjoyed it as much as I did, and that you'll join us again next time. If you're hearing us now, then you probably know where to listen to this, but we can be found almost any place that one can listen to podcasts, as well as on the wider web at dicepunks.com and on Twitter as @dicepunks. With that, I think we're ready to say farewell. Say goodbye to the kind folks at home, players.
Thanks for listening, and if you're playing music and they're dancing to it, keep on playing, and if you fall, try not to go with gravity if you can avoid it.
I am so grateful for all of you listening. My wish for you is that may heal the wounds of the past to head into your brightest future.
Mm.
Thanks for listening, folks. And be precise in your sacrifices. Of what and to whom?
Marvelous. And as the poet once said, life is a hideous thing, through the eye, into the brain. Revelation, time stands still. Extermination of our will.
Thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in, and stick around through the admin stuff for A Murder with Robnet. The songs in this episode, Theme of the Dice Punks in its acoustic version, were written and recorded by the Viscount of Tempo in his element, Drew. Cover art is by Joanne, who has appeared on the podcast now and again. Check out her work around the internet where she goes by Anything Sews. Site design and graphics for DicePunks.com are by Robin, the player behind Lyssa, Nobilis of Fury. Rain and the one-roll engine it runs on were created by Greg Stolze, whose work can be found in a lot of places, but check out GregStolze.com. Nobilis was created by Jenna Catherine Moran, who can be found at afarandsunlessland.wordpress.com with a lot of different projects. Links to both systems and authors can be found on the Punk Remore section of our website, DicePunks.com. Thanks so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, that's reward enough on its own, but if you're so inclined, you can help us out by rating and reviewing us wherever you listen to us, telling your friends who you think would like us to give us a listen, and even by heading over to our Patreon at patreon.com/dicepunks. We have fun rewards available to backers, including a patron-only Discord and access to the Dice Peaks aftershow for episodes 1 and following. Regardless, we hope you'll tune in again, and until then, remember, subtlety is for cowards.
A child, a wolf, a huntsman, with grandmother gone before. Or, if not a huntsman, then a woodsman. In any event, a man with an axe. In most of the versions that are not spoken of, everyone dies. This may be part of the reason they're unmentioned. No one likes stories that have unsatisfactory endings. Narrative is supposed to be neater than reality. Sometimes the axe is the murder weapon, which means it cuts down someone other than the wolf, or a tree. Sometimes the axe is uninvolved in any of the fractal deaths in the story, but the deaths are always there, even in the published iterations. In some version, the child became attached to the wolf, or thought the huntsman had killed Grandmama, or any other motive, and so the woodsman dies. Even though these murders are unspoken, I still know of them, for they are, at their core, mine. I still, however, for not being there, cannot answer the question as to whether a woodsman getting axed in a forest makes a sound.